Welcome to Soccer in 60, presented by the Empire Strikers. Get ready for your weekly look at all the pro soccer teams in Greater Los Angeles. We've got all the news and analysis you need, from LAFC and the LA Galaxy to the Empire Strikers, Angel City FC, and Orange County Soccer Club. Now, buckle up and enjoy Soccer in 60.
Welcome indeed to the fastest paced soccer show in SoCal. This is Soccer in 60, brought to you by SAC Health System, covering all the week's news, highlights, and more from LAFC, the Galaxy, Angel City, Orange County Soccer Club, and of course, your very own hometown Major Arena Soccer League's own Empire Strikers. Hello and welcome. I'm J.R. Liebert, also known as your friendly neighborhood Scarf, joined on the screen by two of the most fantastic people in podcasting and soccer shows, my man Timmy K. Tim Kolatz. How are you, Timmy?
J.R., I'm doing great, man. It's good to see you tonight. It's good to see Philly hanging out with us, too. I'm looking forward to a great show, sir.
That's right. This guy on the upper corner over here, he now has a new title as well, the Director of Corporate Partnerships for the MASL, in addition to all the other hats he wears. Philly, Christian Philemon, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you, my man. That's a lot of hats. What's up, fellas? Great to see you all again. Happy to be harping with you on a happy hour. How's that for an alliteration? Cheers to you, Tim. Cheers to you, Scarf. Cheers to Christian and Gunner in the back, the great and powerful Ozzes of the show. Cheers to the beautiful game. And of course, cheers to Soccer in 60. Fellas, let's party.
Absolutely. Don't forget, if you are listening, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on all your different podcast platforms. And please make sure you subscribe to Soccer in 60 on YouTube. We have a fantastic interview today with Kaylin Kyle, the Apple TV MLS season pass personality, and of course, former Canadian women's national team star. All kinds of great things. Kaylin talks about LAFC, Galaxy, Angel City Football Club, an incredible interview with Kaylin Kyle. A lot of teams off for the international break, but still plenty to talk about here on Soccer in 60. Let's check in first with our good friends over at Omnitrans in partnership with the Empire Strikers. Experience the thrill of game day with Omnitrans. Be in the heart of the action at Toyota Arena and let Omnitrans take care of the ride. Simply download the free transit app to catch your bus and enjoy a stress-free trip to cheer on the Strikers. Don't miss out on the excitement and make every moment count at Toyota Arena. Ride with Omnitrans to your next Empire Strikers game. Let's chat some LAFC, gentlemen. And look, off this week in terms of matches played, but their two biggest stars have shown up and shown out on the international stage. Philly first, obviously, Son Heung-min, everybody watching, the captain of South Korea. And look, it's been a little bit of a mixed bag in terms of results for South Korea, a win over the U.S. and a draw with Mexico. But all Son can do is score for his national team.
Absolutely. Two games that he competed in. First one, obviously, against the U.S. national team. And much to the chagrin of the L.A. councilwoman at his press conference, no, Sonny does not play for the United States men's national team. Although Mauricio Pochettino would certainly love him, because Sonny certainly thrived under Pochettino's guidance over at Tottenham. But he got himself a goal in that game and an assist to Lee in the 43rd minute, dispatching the U.S. relatively quickly. And oh, by the way, he did it as well, scoring against El Tri in both games being friendlies for that matter. That was a very fun, competitive friendly, which Mexico managed to get the equalizer really at the death with Jimenez's goal in the 90-plus fourth minute. But Sonny shining, certainly in Los Angeles and certainly against Mexico and the United States.
Yeah, it was a quiet break for Mathieu Chaunière. Just got about 14 minutes for the Canadian men's national team. Want to give a quick shout out to Adrian Wibowo. He might be a fringe player on LAFC, but he made his national team debut with Indonesia, getting 30 minutes in a draw to Lebanon. Nathan Ordaz has had a good international break with an assist off a corner in the game winner over Guatemala. He did pick up a little bit of a knock against Suriname. But Timmy, One of the biggest stars on one of the biggest stages is Denis Bawanga, and all he did was absolutely put it on Seychelles in a 4-0 win. He got not one, not two, but put on the hats, everybody. It was the hattie for Denis Bawanga. What does it mean, Timmy, that Denis Bawanga is starting to find that scoring touch once again?
I think it makes a big difference for him and the club, because now that he's putting on the hat trick hat, as it were, from the Mad Hatters of the 1926 hockey club, you're going to be looking at these guys at a much different light. And Denis coming in and finding that scoring touch against Seychelles, it's big, because now you're looking at somebody that's going to be able to come in and play with Sonny and not have to have Sonny carry the whole load.
Yeah, and look, with LAFC, with two matches in the span of 5 days coming up, they've got to have these guys ready to go. Don't forget, we also have a fantastic chat with Kaylin Kyle. She was incredible, talking about LAFC, the Galaxy, Angel City Football Club. Kaylin Kyle, former Canadian women's national team star and MLS pundit, up next.
Our guest is one of the most accomplished players in Canadian soccer history and now one of the most recognizable MLS broadcasters. He earned 101 caps for Canada, won an Olympic bronze in 2012, and played professionally in Sweden and the NWSL, primarily with Seattle, Houston, Portland, and Orlando. Today, she is a leading voice on Apple TV's MLS Season Pass, where she serves as an analyst and a frequent host of MLS 360. We are so excited to have with us the one, the only, Kaylin Kyle. Kaylin, welcome to Soccer in 60.
By the way, I'm not sure who wrote that intro for you guys, but give me his number, because I could use that for when Kevin introduces me on set for MLS 360. That would be fantastic.
Well, you're looking at one of the two authors of it. I guess we'll just leave it up to you to guess which one did it. We'll leave the mystery there. Thank you so much for taking time to chat with us. Let's get right into it, starting, of course, with LAFC. Now, Kaylin, LAFC has taken just 5 points from 4 games since the arrival of Sun Heung-min. Now, granted, 3 of those games were on the road, but then you also had that frustrating loss to San Diego at home. I think it's fair to say that Sonny has looked quite good. How do you feel he fits in the LAFC system? What has he added? And why will we feel like he hasn't provided that genuine boost toward a run at first place in the West and possibly even the Supporters Shield?
I mean, you took the words out of my mouth. I mean, you'd go his first three games were on the road. That's very difficult, as we all know, here in Major League Soccer. If you're a good road team, it means I don't know what you're doing right, because that is extremely, extremely hard to do. I mean, Chicago Fire is doing it this season, but that's about it. But what he's done in the short amount of time, I mean, not coming off a preseason, coming over after being in his offseason with Tottenham. Yes, he was in preseason with them for a little bit, but we all know as professional athletes, that's very different when you're in a preseason as opposed to playing 90-minute matches. And what he's done is he's almost given them a focal point within that team that they were lacking. Obviously, Olivier Giroud, one of, you know, the best strikers in the world, but we just didn't see that at LAFC. I think he struggled with the way that they play. They play in transitional moments. Now, I think with Sun, they can do both. They can play in transitional moments, but they can also, and they do have players to have a beautiful brand of football. So I'll be interested to see that progress under Steve Trundolo. And it's also a difficult one as well. You have Steve Trundolo leaving at the end of the season. So it's almost, they have nothing to lose at this point. You're playing for a manager that's had a lot of success in a short amount of time, and he's implemented a really good structure with the players that he's had.
And speaking of difficulties, LAFC's had some difficulties in terms of injuries. And following the long-term injury to LAFC captain Aaron Long, Nkosi Tafari seems to be the center back of choice for Steve Cherundolo. Now, against San Diego, former Watford man Ryan Porteous got the start. What do you think of this performance, and how much of an issue do you see Long's absence being for the rest of the regular season, but also come playoff time when games are awfully decided by extremely tiny margins?
It's huge. I mean, when you look at center backs in Major League Soccer, I think it's probably one of the most difficult positions to get right. Obviously, with the rules restriction with the DPs and your Tam and Gam. And I think that they've nailed it with him. He's an MLS vet. He knows what it takes to win. He's a leader not only on the pitch, but he's a leader off the pitch as well. So I think it's a huge, huge loss for LAFC. He epitomizes what it is to be, you know, a captain, a leader, whether that's vocal, whether that's communication. Obviously, we have like a different eyesight into it because Sasha Kljestan and him are very close. So, you know, the stories that we get of how he speaks of his teammates, what LAFC means to him, what the city means to him, goes beyond with a shadow of a doubt that, you know, it's going to be a massive loss. Now, what I will say is LAFC has done a really good job in bringing in players that can fill those roles. Now, it's going to take time, like any player. But if any team can do it under a manager, it would probably be LAFC in what I would say a weaker conference than the Eastern Conference right now. But I still, and I hate to say this, I still think San Diego is the daddies of the California teams right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair, actually, as much as Philly doesn't want to hear that. We touched on Steve Cherundolo. There's a debate that rages on, has been raging among LAFC supporters. When we had your Apple TV colleague, Bradley Wright Phillips on, he said that you can't really argue with Cherundolo's all-time record and success at LAFC, no. But that maybe he's not necessarily a proponent of that exhilarating attacking style that the fans there have come to expect. I'm curious where you stand. Do you feel that the LAFC fans are just spoiled, or could Cherundolo truly be a mismatch at that club?
No,
or perhaps
I think
maybe both.
When you talk about LA teams, obviously it's a nice destination for players to go and have a good rest of their career. And I think for LAFC, they really built not only a fantastic soccer specific stadium, but the 3252 is probably some of the best fans in Major League Soccer. And then you add in, you live in California, it's beautiful weather all the time. I think with Steve Cherundolo, and I agree with Bradley Wright Phillips with what he's done in his short tenure, with the amount of time that he's had, he's done extremely well. Now he's also had a lot of very talented players. I mean, Vela, you just look at all the stars that LAFC has had, but he's done a really good job implementing a structure. And I think what works for his playing philosophy, what I will say, and I've been saying it all season long, I think they have the ability to play different brands of football. Rather, I know you have a Denny Bwanga that thrives in transitional moments, but I also think you have a good solid back line when Aaron Long's healthy. You have a good midfield, multiple midfield players that are good when they do have time and space on the ball. And then you add in a player like Sun that's, you know, you can play him wide, you can play him as that target number nine, he can roll inside, he can play, take players on one-on-one. I think you need to build, you know, a different way in which you can play, but I'm not taking anything away from Steve Cherundolo. I think, you know, with the amount of time that he's had with LAFC, his numbers speak volume.
Now let's, for a final LAFC question, let's just quickly look ahead at the two games coming up here, almost back to back, San Jose and RSL. These are for the opponents. These are massive games. They're both in the middle of a heated race to the playoffs in the Western Conference. Yeah. RSL desperately looking to snap a 3-game losing streak. The Quakes most recently won at Houston, then lost at Austin. Based on what you've seen from RSL and San Jose, what do you expect to see in these games for LAFC, and what are keys to success?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you talk about California teams going head to head, it's always derbies in which you want to tune into, because, you know, I was jokingly saying San Diego are the daddies of the California teams right now, and they just got three little sons because they've played them off the pitch. But what I will say, when you look at LAFC, I think obviously they're more dominant team against San Jose, but Bruce Arena, he's done a really good job of implementing a structure. They've just been really inconsistent this year. They'll get a win, then they get a loss, then they get a win. But I think that they have the players, if it is a team to take LAFC on at their highest point, I would bet on San Jose being able to do that. I still think LAFC have way too many threats in that attacking end to kind of put them to bed. And with RSL, it's a difficult one. They've made a lot of moves. You have, you know, a player like Diego Luna that's put the team on his back for the entirety of the season. He's been out with international duty. So it's a difficult one for RSL, you know, when you do only have one mainstay player in that team that you've really implemented everything around. And he's been in and out of the team due to national team duty, which is incredible for him. I keep saying that he should be, you know, one of those players that makes the brink of Mauricio Pochettino's team for the 2026 FIFA World Cup here in our own backyard.
Moving on from LAFC, we're going to hop on everybody's favorite highway in this town, the 110, to go 13 miles from Bank of California. Oops, BMO Stadium down to Carson, Dignity Health Sports Park. We're going from one BMO. Kaylin, you're already at another BMO, but the one up in Toronto.
Now, I am, you're just over here.
I I love Canada. I need to take another trip back there. That's mm-hmm. besides the point. You're a former professional player. I'm not sure, though, you've been in a similar situation as the Galaxy has been in this year, where they're coming off of a championship but start out so poorly that the playoffs become an uphill climb almost immediately. Now, with the team all but really being eliminated from contention, how would you approach the final stretch of the regular season if you were in charge? Do you try to give the starters some confidence? Do you play the kids? And then also, how do you keep the group interested with really nothing to play for the rest of the season?
The thing is, as players, I mean, it's easy for fans to say they have nothing to play for. They have everything to play for. They have contracts to play for next season. You know, Greg Vanney is an extremely successful coach in Major League Soccer. You've seen him do it with Toronto. You've seen him do it with the Galaxy. And quite frankly, I mean, yeah, okay, you can talk about the beginning of their season, you know, injuries with Peck, Painsill, and then the departure of Jovalich to Sporting Kansas City, Ricky Pouche out with the ACL injury. But those excuses are gone now. They have to start stepping up. And I think the biggest question mark for the Galaxy has been that number nine position. You have Dejan Jovalich that is at Sporting Kansas City, arguably a worse team than the LA Galaxy if you're putting pen to paper and looking at a roster. And he has 15, 16 goals on the season. You combined the front three of LA Galaxy, whether that's Christian Ramirez, Peck, Painsill, and even throw in Marco Royce in that mix. I don't even think they match the numbers of Jovalich for Sporting Kansas City. I think maybe they have around 15, 16 goals. So maybe one or two underneath, which tells you everything that you need to know about the Galaxy. They're just not producing enough in the attacking third. So if I am Greg Vanney, I'm probably, you know, giving the younger guys a run for their show and saying, how much do you want it? You know, there's spots available on this team. Our big stars haven't stepped up, and it'll be really interesting to see where they go from here. But, you know, when it is Greg Vanney, you know, he's a great manager. He's played in the league. He's played at the highest level. He's coached at the highest level. So I got no doubt that he does have a game plan moving forward. I have no doubt that the LA Galaxy's front office has a game plan in the next transfer window of players in which they need to bring in, because they do need to bring in players. And I think they need to bring in those middle of the pool MLS players, you know, your TAMs, your GAMs that make up your middle roster that aren't your DPs and aren't your kids, you know, fresh out of the academy.
Gotta love the acronyms that we have in Major League Soccer. So unique.
Yeah.
As compared
sorry.
To- a lot was made of the chance to salvage the season by winning the League's Cup. Now that the mm-hmm. Galaxy hasn't done even that, but at least they secured a spot in next year's Champions Cup. How much of a disaster would you say, though, that 2025 has been, barring that aside? And in addressing all the contributing factors, is it really fair to look past the head coach who was in charge of everything throughout this process? In most other leagues, he'd be battling relegation right now. I mean, do you think Vanney should be untouchable based on last year's success?
I wouldn't say, I don't think any manager's obviously untouchable. And I think you're seeing that more and more so, especially in Major League Soccer, where, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 games in a run, managers are under pressure, which I think speaks volume about the league and in which and where it's going. But what I will say is, from last year to this year, and I talk about those middle of the roster players that made such a difference, they got rid of 2 or 3 key components from last year's success that played 90-minute match performances, that were never injured. Then you get rid of Dejan Jovalich to Sporting Kansas City. He's a player that's going to get you, you know, 12, 13, 15 goals a season consistently, plus he can make assists. Those are massive pieces that they are missing. And then throw in, the likes of Ricky Pouche with his ACL injury. Someone had said it to me a few weeks, or maybe this was like a month and a half back, saying, you know, Ricky Pouche, there's no reason to bring him back in this season. I thought, well, I didn't agree, but now I'm like, you're dead right. Why are you risking him this season when he is one of your stars and he was a key of your success for that MLS Cup run that they did win? Their home form was phenomenal in 2024. We just haven't seen that, but you got to put pressure on Peck and Painsill after coming back from injury. They haven't been, you know, the players that we saw back in 2024 that can consistently produce in that attacking third. They went on a little bit of a run in the League's Cup, and we thought maybe we saw a turning point, but since coming back to regular season, they've fallen off just a little bit again.
Mm-hmm. And now just one more for the Galaxy. We'll do the same thing. We kind of look ahead at what's coming up immediately here.
Get my crystal ball out. Love it.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. Yeah. At Houston, just looking back real quick, at Houston, the Galaxy played a lot of their promising young players. They did play a lot of their kids and showed some grit in fighting back and tying the game very, very late. What did you see in that game? And based on that, do you have any hope whatsoever for this upcoming game at Seattle, a team that recently wiped the floor with them in the two games in Carson?
I'm laughing and it's not nice, but no, I mean, I look at Seattle Sounders and they are powerhouses in the West. They're powerhouses in Major League Soccer. And oh yeah, they're fresh off of beating Inter Miami in the League's Cup final and smashed them in that. And they just showed so much class and so much dignity in that game. And that's only going to add confidence in the remainder of the season. Brian Schmetzer for me has got to be and has to go down as one of the league's best MLS coaches. And it's weird because when you look at him, you wouldn't think all the trophies and hardware that he has won. And I mean that in the nicest way possible because he's just so genuine and down to earth. But no, I can't see the Galaxy, you know, giving them a run for their money this week. And I think Seattle will take this. And I think they're going to go on and continue on their hot streak, which is, you know, unfortunate for the Galaxy. I did love that Greg Vanney played the young guys for the Houston Dynamo. Like I said, it goes back to the point earlier that no spot is safe with the Galaxy. When you play for the Galaxy, the reason why they have six MLS Cup titles to their name is because they're one of the best teams in Major League Soccer. And it hasn't lived up to this season. And I think it's putting pressure on, you know, which players want to return for next year.
Now, while we have you, let's obviously you're a former NWSL player, Canadian women's national team player. We got to talk to you for at least a couple minutes about Angel City here, our NWSL team. The new coach, Alex Strauss, has assembled since he arrived a record of 2-5-2. Not great. He recently had back-to-back wins over Orlando and Bay, but then ACFC fell 3-1 this past weekend at Gotham after leading at the half. Alex Strauss famously has an extremely intricate system and philosophy. I wonder if you think his players are starting to internalize that. Are you seeing any progress from them on the field?
Yeah, I am. And it takes time. And I'll just revert back to my playing days when John Herdman came into our Canadian women's national team. We were, you know, the run and dump it. Route one football, the midfields. I mean, I was in chiropractor every other week because I never saw the ball. My head was just going back and forth with that team. John Herdman came in and he implemented a structure and implemented a game plan. And it took us time because his wording, his vocal communication with us, it didn't resonate because we were never taught this as young kids in the way that he spoke football. You know, the low platform, high platform, midfield three, midfield two, triangle, diamond, like, there's just so many different ways to play under him. And I remember my first month under him, my brain felt like it was popping out of my eyes. I was like, what is going on here? And that's one of my biggest strengths is football IQ. And I think, you know, you could ask any coach that, and that's one of my greatest strength. And that's why, you know, I'm an analyst at the highest level. And I did it at the 2022 World Cup, but it was so difficult to understand and trying to, you know, internalize everything and then try to internalize everything with 22 players and 11 players on the pitch around you. It's difficult. And I think it takes time with the players. It takes time with the coaching staff, especially in the NWSL, because it is a continuously growing league. But, you know, he's a successful coach. And I think, again, it's just going to take a little bit of time with Angel City. There's been a lot of turnover there. There's been a lot of player turnover there as well, from big stars coming in to big stars going out. The only thing I would say is give it a bit of time.
We've seen Angel City in action twice since the departure of Alyssa Thompson, once on the win over Bay and then in the loss at Gotham. With the benefit of being able to factor those games in, you know, what are your thoughts on Angel City's decision to sell Alyssa to Chelsea? Do you think there's a chance the system, once fully implemented, is so strong that the team rallies around it enough to maybe even turn such an apparent negative into a positive?
I don't think it's a negative, though. I think, if anything, it shines a positive light on the NWSL. It shines a positive light on the U.S. women's national team and the development of soccer in North America, and especially in America. I mean, you can't. What I will say, I've been in a situation, I won't say where, I won't say with who, but where they haven't released you or they haven't allowed you to go sign overseas. And again, in women's sport, because it is growing, obviously back in the day, we didn't make the money that they make now. I think it's fantastic that Angel City said, you know what, go and prove yourself over in Europe. It's a very different style in which they play football. And I think if any player can and will do it, it would be a player of her. She, again, I don't personally know her, but just watching interviews and seeing, you know, talking to former teammates and stuff, she's just got this light, bright personality, which when you have that open-mindedness, you're going to be successful wherever you are. And then, oh yeah, add the skill in which she has. Good luck. Good luck, defenders.
I still ponder what kind of finder's fee. You talk about the U.S. national women's team. How much would have a finder's fee Emma got? She had to have been part of the transaction in some way, shape, or form. I don't know.
I'm putting my fingers together money, because obviously I'm joking, but the finder's fee would have been very nice. But this is why Emma Hayes is one of the best coaches in the women's game and in the world, is because she's done it on so many different levels. And it's just fantastic to see.
Of course. And last question again, thank you so much for your time. Like Gunner's been doing for all the other teams, we're obviously going to do it for Angel City. Let's look ahead to the game at North Carolina. It's been a tumultuous time for the Courage, with the very odds of firing former head coach Sean Nahas and its aftermath. Since then, like, North Carolina's only earned, what, 3 points in five games, and is a direct competitor with ACFC for one of those coveted playoff spots. Like, what are the keys to success for Angel City in this six-pointer? And if you're an Angel, if you're ACFC, do you think of this as a crucial, as crucial, or is it more, I don't know, continuing to implement the new system? Like, what do you think?
No, I think this comes down to crucial now. And I was on the, I did a call for the game. When was it? About a month ago. And I think if you're Angel City, you're going to have to control transitional moments, because that's where they hurt you. They hurt you, you know, late half, late game, where mentally you start to switch off a bit, because they do have very pacey players up top. They do have a dynamic midfield. But I think with Angel City, again, when you're trying to implement a structure, it's easier to do so against teams like that, because you don't want to get left in the back line opened up. You want your midfield attached to your back line, your front line attached to your midfield. So I have a really good feeling about this game, that Angel City, you know, potentially could pick up the 3 points in the first game, especially against a team that has been struggling defensively.
That's all the questions that we have. You know, Kaylin, on behalf of myself, Gunner, and everybody at Soccer in 60, we just want to say thank you so much for spending time with us, 20 minutes or so. That's a lot of time, but thank you again. We love what you do on MLS 360. You know, shout out to everybody that's there. And again, thank you so much. Keep up the good work. We love watching you on Apple TV.
No, thank you so much for having me, you guys. I appreciate it.
So there it is. Fantastic interview with Kaylin Kyle. She talked a little bit about everything, including Angel City. Look, let's talk about the elephant in the room that's no longer in the room real quick. The deal was made official, and she didn't even break the transfer record window. Alyssa Thompson leaving for Chelsea for around a reported $1.3 million. And guys, the issue that I have with it is that if it does eventually break that transfer record, it's going to do so because her performance over at Chelsea will kick in those incentives. Philly, I don't know what's going on over at Angel City, but to lose the face, the heart, the soul of the club like that in the middle of a playoff push, in the middle of a season ticket selling push, that's got to be devastating over in Angel City.
Yeah, one has to question what the business strategy is of the front office. And unfortunately, if you go to social media, you see a lot of Angel City supporters been questioning the MO from day one. But obviously for Alyssa, a fantastic opportunity to go to one of the best clubs in the WSL. This is great. But obviously for Angel City, this hurts, because they are looking to make that run and that push into the postseason. But lucky for them, even despite her absence, they've done okay under Alex Strauss and her not being there. Look, that's a fact of business. You can't exactly get too tied in to any players. At the end of the day, coaches, personnel, players come and go, but it's the fans that are perpetual. But in this case, the fans really they really have that mud flung at their face, because without Alyssa Thompson, the second leading scorer, might I add, on the team, where's a lot of this offense, you know, going to be coming from? Obviously, Riley Tiernan scoring a bunch of goals, and a lot of other players, Kennedy Fuller, contributing. But look, none of them are the talent of Alyssa Thompson. And at $1.3 million, sure, when those incentives kick in over $2 million, it'll look like big business. But I don't know. I'm of the mindset that a girl this talented with a ceiling that high should have just hit that $2 million mark right off the bat and had those incentives kick in later.
Yeah, and Tim, not the same opinion shared by Caitlin Kyle in our interview, right? She seemed to think it was a good idea, good advertising for the NWSL. But I don't know, Tim, what do you think? When you let a great player like that walk out the door, is that really good advertising for NWSL?
Yes and no. So Caitlin brought it up in the interview talking about it, but I think what the true test of this will be is how high that ceiling is for her over at Chelsea. Will she get as much playing time? And the attacking forwards, attacking players for Chelsea right now, they're going to come in and they're going to have Alyssa Thompson come in and she's going to make a gaggle of money. And I think that's one of the things that will force NWSL to change their salary cap numbers from 3.3 million currently this year to when the collective bargaining agreement changes at 2020 and caps out at 5.1. I think that's really going to force NWSL to really say, okay, if we're collecting $110 million in expansion fees like the Denver Summit has paid, they've got to have bigger than, you know, a 3% expansion fee as their payroll.
Listen, couldn't agree with you more about expanding the wallets and the pocketbooks. Look, to try and sweep the move under the rug as if that was possible, they announced the move at 5 o'clock in the morning. And then 3 hours later, they announced that her sister, 19-year-old defender Giselle Thompson, is on a new contract through 2029. Philly, I got to ask you, what does that really mean? In January of this year, they extended both Thompson sisters through 2028, and Alyssa walked out the door. Does that mean that Giselle sticks around any longer than she already might have?
I mean, I think so, because she is younger, has a little less time underneath her belt playing for Angel City. Still somewhat of a talent to develop, but she's obviously blossoming in very well. She's leading the team as far as assists are concerned. But I mean, to lose both Thompsons, if that was the case, I mean, you would have had season tickets completely convert on the opposite end of things. If you go to Chelsea Women's Instagram page, I think over the first, no less than 6-7 posts of Alyssa. So obviously they're excited, and maybe just silence any fears about Giselle going as well, sign her, make her stick as much as possible. But, you know, I don't know how much of a good idea, you know, this really is, because, you know, shouldn't the NWSL be where people want to come? I mean, obviously me, if I was Alyssa being in California the entire time, I'd love to go out to London, but I don't know how much of a good business scenario this is. This is one of those scenarios where we'll have to see how it unfolds, how she does at Chelsea. But either way, I think this has Emma Hayes written all over it. And as I jokingly said during the last pod, I'd love to know what her finder's fee is. Cha-ching.
Yeah, and look, maybe the hangover occurred at Gotham, right, when they lost 3-1. They've got another match against Courage coming up on Saturday. Saturday, 9:30 in the morning. Get up early, Angel City fans. Let's talk a little bit of Galaxy. They actually were playing this last week. We've got a match to talk about. That's fun. A 1-1 draw at the very death in Houston. We know that that they played Gotham this last week, Angel City. So they were in action too. Don't worry, we didn't forget about them. But they do play North Carolina Courage next week. But Galaxy, that draw at Houston, Lucas Sanabria rescuing a point. But I got to ask you, Tim, rescuing a point, all that did was maybe delay the nail in the coffin an extra week or so with Seattle Sounders coming up on tap. The goal, look, a great goal, a morale builder for Galaxy. We've talked about how they're going to be able to keep the momentum going through what is likely going to be a meaningless end of the regular season for the Galaxy. But with just that one point, Tim, still delaying the inevitable, right?
Completely delaying the inevitable, because the nail has been in the coffin. It's just been a matter of time if they put them in the ground, because this season was done when they didn't win after their first 10 or 14 games. They were never going to make the playoffs, no matter how good of a club they've been. I mean, I looked at it today. Last year, the top four scorers for the Galaxy had 53 goals. The top four scorers this year right now are sitting at like 17. Cool. So, you lose that type of production. Now, the Sanabria goal was a great give and go. It was a great play. It was a great lofted ball in, snap header. I think the reality, though, is that, like Kalen said, and what we talked about last week on the show, a lot of these guys are playing for contracts, playing for next year, not this year. But they got to play this year to get that next year's contract.
Yeah, it's hard when you're watching a guy like Dejan Jovalich play this year, and he's got 17 goals for Sporting Philly. Let me ask you, Galaxy sitting on 20 points through 28 matches, 6 matches to go. They're 2 points back of St. Louis with a match in hand, 4 points back of Montreal and D.C. Can they avoid the wooden spoon?
Of course they could avoid the wooden spoon, and I'm sure they're feeling themselves. Look, that was a very gritty performance against Houston, and Greg Vanney utilized the kids in that effort. So it still goes to show you that the team has a lot of fight left in them. They could have easily just not cared and just walked over it, had Houston walk all over them, but they obviously fought. And then next up, they get to play the Sounders on the road. Obviously, we're going to talk a bit about that. Depending on what their performance is there, I'm sure they would like to get a little bit of revenge against Brian Schmetzer. But in the grand scheme of things, look, they've already won their MLS Cup in a way, which is securing a Champions League spot. I'm not sure if you fellas see behind me, there is a World Wrestling Entertainment pillow. So to quote one of the great legends in regards to the season, The Undertaker, I will say,
rest in peace
to the Galaxy season. But I don't think they're going to go away quietly because, as Kalen said, players are fighting for contracts. There are still incentives, game day incentives, season-long incentives. So we're going to see them fight, and any professional athlete's not going to necessarily keel over. I mean, they get into this because of a love for the game and a competitive drive that brought them to this level. They're going to continue to fight and pound the pitch as much as they can, in particular when they go against some of their hated rivals like the Seattle Sounders.
And speaking of pounding the pitch, congratulations to Joseph Painsel, making his first appearance for the Ghanaian national team in over a year, subbing on against Mali. We'll have to see what the Galaxy are able to do over the rest of these next 6 games to avoid that wooden spoon. Let's check in with our good friends over at National Core. National Core is one of the nation's largest nonprofit affordable housing developers and, of course, a proud sponsor of the MASL Zone Empire Strikers. At National Core, they believe that soccer has the power to transform lives just like they do. They believe in building strong communities on and off the field. And to learn more about National Core and their mission, head on over to nationalcore.org. All right, it's time to talk a little bit of Empire Strikers, and we can't talk about the Empire Strikers without Philly. I know I'm going to give you a quick second here to talk about this. You're the play-by-play voice of the Empire Strikers, but now working for the league as well, director of corporate partnerships. Just want to give you a quick second. I want to say congrats and tell us just a very quick little bit about your role before we get into the Strikers trio.
Look, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. It's an honor. The press release came out, and just to quench a lot of the, I've gotten a lot of messages about this. I'm still staying in the booth. Yeah, come hell or high water, no one's pulling me out of that broadcast booth. I'm still going to be the play-by-play guy for the Strikers and all the other teams that I do it for. Scarf, you were there with me the very first time we laid eyes on the turf at Toyota Arena. I fell in love with the game back then as a fan, and obviously going from podcaster to broadcaster, and obviously now front office. My goal has always been to help elevate the game and the league. And now I get to do it in the most awesome way possible. This isn't my fifth task or sixth hat. This is literally going to be my bread and butter. My mortgage in Los Angeles, potentially my marriage, is on the line on this one. I believe in the sport. I believe in the beauty of indoor soccer, and I am going to build it and help grow it in all the local markets by hoping to achieve national sponsorship deals, hopefully airlines, lodging, apparel, snack providers, hydration partners. Like, yeah, I'm going to be directly responsible for all of that. So this will be, for what I'm looking at, is one of the greatest achievements and accomplishments in my life, something that I hope to leave a lasting legacy for years to come.
And Philly, you're doing it in the MASL, the Major Arena Soccer League, the highest level of indoor soccer in the world. And with that, the Empire Strikers bring in 3 pretty high level talents, and they've all got something in common with each other. If you watch TST, not only did you probably hear my buddy Philly's voice broadcasting a couple of those games out there, but if you watched Villarreal CF, you saw all 3 of these players in 2025 at the TST. Midfielder Steven Chavez signed through 28-29, the 28-year-old from Texas. He's got obviously the TST experience, some time with Mesquite and Texas. Last season was a big one. Tim, 14 goals, 14 assists, averaging over a point a match. This is a big get for Coach Onua Obasi.
Absolutely. It's going to allow the attacking of the Empire Strikers to just go in and really focus in on just driving that ball into the back of the net. Onuobasi will probably still use the goalkeeper as the sixth attacker. But when you've got somebody that put 28 of his career 29 points on the score sheet just last season, you may not have to pull the goalkeeper as much as you used to. And you're going to get a lot of assists, 14 assists. This is a big number for a team that has some goal scoring, but they need another assist man.
No, absolutely. And look, if you're looking for more explosivity up top, how about forward Ant Powell, signed through the 27-28 season, also from Texas, the 29-year-old Philly, the 7-year MASL veteran who also set his career high in points per game last season at almost a point per match. He's played on the U.S. national futsal team. Ant Powell, part of the new striking up top for the Strikers. This could be a lot of fun for Coach Obasi.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of these signings were mentioned in previous weeks, but obviously everything's solidified. Ant Powell also played pro outdoor in Iceland and Sweden, and he does have time playing with Steven Chavez as they were both on the same UPSL side. So, he brings in a plethora of experience. We're bringing in a lot of great players from Texas and obviously creating a team that's going to look to make a very deep run in the postseason. Empire extremely active in the offseason, and there's still one more player we've got to mention. And I'm not going to steal the thunder away from you. Let's talk a little bit about Empire's new defender.
Well, I wanted to take a second. Hold on. I want to talk about Felipe Dutra in just a second. He is 6'4", so you can't miss him. Trust me, we're going to talk about him. But I want to ask you, Philly, you talked about it, right? Played a little bit in Iceland, played a little bit in Sweden. He's been in the NPSL for a little bit, played with the FC Dallas Academy. What does it mean that the Major Arena Soccer League is able to acquire talent that hasn't just played in the indoor game, right, but has spent large portions of their career in the outdoor game and playing in places over in Europe, playing over in South America, all kinds of great places that they're finding these talent?
I mean, that's part of my love of the indoor league is there's players that have been all over the world and have amazing stories that are absolutely worth telling. And Ant Powell, obviously, is a great example of that, having played at some very high levels. But most people don't know about him. They'll get to know about him when he's a member of the Empire Strikers. And something that I garnered, I don't want to mention any names, but some of the personnel that worked in the front office of the Dallas Sidekicks, upon the signing, they unsolicited messaged me saying, not only is he a great player, but he's a great person to have in the locker room and in the community. Anybody that's gotten a chance to meet Powell has had nothing but great things to say. And I've gotten a lot of messages from a lot of fans down in the Sidekick territory that we're really lucky to have him because he's a great player. And same can be said about Steven Chavez. In a season in which the Texas Outlaws struggled after, you know, quite an overhaul, the loss of Tattoo, their coach, some of their best players, Steven Chavez really shined. So bolstering the midfielding, bolstering the forwards, and obviously having a 6'4 defender who we're going to talk about momentarily, that also helps out massively.
Oh, to be 26 years old, 6'4", and to be
scarf to be 36 years old,
to be in the kind of shape to play in the MASL for the Empire Strikers. Tim, Felipe Dutra, the 26-year-old from Brazil, doesn't have a ton of indoor experience, but certainly has the playing experience. He's actually played under Coach Onuobasi. This is a huge, almost literally huge get for the Empire Strikers.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to figure this one out. I think it's going to be an indoor eclipse when he shows up on the pitch for the very first time. But I always like the other thing. He played at Naugatuck. How can you not like a guy that went and played at a place called Naugatuck? I mean, you got to love the guy just for that. This is a very big get. I know that we've said it a couple of times on just today's show is that, but when you put a guy that's 6'4", when most of your other players, especially the attacking forwards, are 5'8", 5'7", 5'9", you got a 6'4" guy, just the intimidation factor alone, Scarf, is going to take away 5 or 6 goals just as him being on the field.
Yeah, and look, Philly and I got to call the bagel last year when Empire was already shutting people out. So who knows? Bringing a player like Felipe Dutra, we may get to call a couple more bagels this season, Philly. Look, he moved to Connecticut when he was 11 years old, found his way to a team out there in the Connecticut Soccer League called Newtown Pride FC. Turns out he stuck with them for a little bit, played in the 2023 edition of the TST, with Newtown under Coach Onua Obasi, and all they did, Philly, was win the whole thing. I mean, this is – he's a player with tons of futsal experience, just not a lot indoor.
So when it comes to Brazilians, Brazilians, for the most part, have futsal in their body because that'd be the equivalent of playing street basketball here in the United States. But you said it, a very important thing is to highlight the fact that, yes, he did play under Coach Onua Obasi at TST, and he was successful. Love it or hate it, Obasi created a system that really had coaches and defensive tacticians rolling their heads because the style that he adopted, it worked at TST, and for the most part, it worked at Empire and within the MASL as well. Even though he's coming in to play indoor, the futsal experience that he had growing up as a kid will make his ability to transition on over to the turf relatively easier, and at the same time, he understands Obasi's system, so it shouldn't take too long for him to figure things out. It's just a matter of the physics, utilizing the boards to your advantage and being a bit more physical, something that he's going to learn. But I mean, I think he's going to adapt to it like a fish in water. This is going to be a big time thing. If only I understood Portuguese, because I would love to hear the battles that him and Target Forward from Kansas City Commentary and Marquez would have up top screaming at each other. 2 6-foot-4 players, a Target Forward in Kansas City, and Rian, obviously a 6-foot-4 defender in that of Dutra. This is going to be a good time.
And Philly, and Tim, we can all talk about this real quick. Coach Onua Obasi now kind of remaking the team again in his image. You notice he's brought in a player on the forward line, a player on the midfield line, and a player on the back line. And all three of these players played with Villarreal CF in 2025 in the TST. So I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say, when they have their line changes and those players hop over the boards, we're going to see all three of these guys hop over the board together because of their time with Villarreal. All right, now we're getting to Tim's favorite part of the show. Although, I don't know, Timmy, this was a rough one. And one of the other teams in action this week, Orange County Soccer Club, they got run out of the Motor City pretty good there, Timmy. A 4-1 shellacking at the hands of Detroit City. Look, Ethan Zubac gave you a little bit of hope with the PK in the 16th to make it level 1-1. Unfortunately, they had to keep playing.
Yeah, this was a brutal result in Detroit. Detroit is a very good soccer club. And the inability of Orange County to finish and the absolute clinical finishing of Detroit was incredible. You get 4 goals and you only put 7 shots on frame, you're doing something right. Yeah. Detroit has it figured out. They knew what they were doing. They knew how to kind of not really pick apart the Orange County boys, because the County boys outplayed them for probably 80% of this match. They just couldn't finish when it mattered the most at the very end, Scarf. And this was one of the most brutal parts of it, is they just played well. You know, there was some dicey refereeing, but you're going to get that. The biggest thing that I felt was a little disturbing was the knock that Colin Shuttler took.
Right.
You know, just before that, if you're watching the game, there's a little feistiness with the crew, and that's fine. And Colin Shuttler did kind of shove over a Detroit guy because he was in his way. You got to get out of the way of the goalie. But what kind of chapped my eye a little bit was that Colin Shuttler took one in the back. And it wasn't so much that he got hit down pretty hard. It's just that he fell awkwardly. And that was the biggest problem that I had with it. It could have been at least a yellow. And there was just not enough cards in this game. And we've talked about this several times, Scarf and Philly, that you want to call the game tight, but you got to let the guys play. And in this particular instance, the referee didn't call anything. And that was the tough part of it, that he has to go out before half.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Look, Colin Shuttler comes out, Tetsuya Kodono, the Irvine native, but relatively inexperienced for Orange County Soccer Club, comes on at keeper, made a save, unfortunately did allow one goal in the second half. But you got to wonder about the long-term health of Colin Shuttler. Colin Shuttler's been great for Orange County over the course of the year. And yeah, you're right, Tim. There was that handball that could have been called in the box about a half hour in that wasn't called. But the bottom line, Philly, if you put just 3 on target and you allow 4 to the other team, the math just doesn't math there, right?
No, and it doesn't take a finance guru to figure that out. Look, Detroit struck early. They were relentless. Three first-half goals absolutely set the tone. Ethan Zubak, friend of the show, obviously, yeah, he gets a goal in the game. But, I mean, the big thing is, you know, will the health of Colin Shuttler be put into question as they are going to look to go back home and at the champ and play another great team, an even better team, dare I say, than Detroit in that of Charleston Battery? Obviously, this is a heartbreaking loss for Orange County. I mean, they're in a tight race to clinch postseason, but with Shuttler's health being in question, that obviously is going to be a big blow to the team. I didn't necessarily see too many bright points in this. I will like give props to Detroit City in their terms of their support. There's been shows on Detroit City support all over YouTube. They were a city vying for MLS contention. Mm-hmm. They're doing great things in Motor City. I can't help but stop singing Kiss. The band Kiss is really stuck
Detroit
in my head.
Rock City.
Detroit Rock City. But obviously all eyes are going to be on the next contest. A loss on the road, always a tough thing to win on the road in any league, but they're welcoming in a very tough Charleston team, and it shouldn't be an easy one for the boys below the orange curtain this week coming up.
Yeah, well, look, they're headed to Lexington, Kentucky, and then to Charleston, and here's the problem with them going out on the road like this. Tim, they're 2-7-2 on the road. They don't travel well, especially this season. Let me ask you, Detroit is the first of what is now five of the next seven on the road for Orange County. How can they get things going on the road? You can't go giving up four goals.
No, they cannot, and especially against Lexington, who's just come into the league this year, and we talked about them earlier in the season, and they've been surprising, kind of like San Diego in the MLS. They've been the shock of the Western Conference, and they sit in fourth. I think the biggest thing that is going to help Orange County is the difference that between fourth place and where Orange County sits in eighth place is 3 points. So you win this, they get the exact same number of points that Lexington has at 31, and it could potentially push Lexington out or down the ladder on the playoff picture. So I think that's the best thing that Orange County can do is keep fighting, because every point matters over the next 7-8 games. In this playoff push, you have to get points no matter what you do.
Tim, you're absolutely right. Orange County sitting on 28 points. They've got at least one game in hand on everybody except New Mexico. And you mentioned it. They're actually in ninth, 28 points sitting in ninth, 31 points sitting in fourth. And between that, by the way, they got four teams sitting on 30 points. It is as congested as could possibly be for Orange County Soccer Club, but still plenty of time, plenty of season left. Look, we've talked. Yes, Philly.
Are we not going to address the tie to LAFC in the room? Lexington SC, the new home of one Latif Blessing. Are we not going to bring that up?
We were going to talk about that when we play them next week, because we'll be able to talk about the actual match.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. I wanted to give a shout out to one of my favorite LAFC players of all time.
I hear you. Look, with only three different clubs in action this week, with Galaxy, Orange County Soccer Club, and Angel City, we have moved from a best 11 to something that Philly is far more familiar in talking about, which would be an MASL Indoor Elite Six. But our producer, our creative director, Gunner, he's gone ahead and thrown another curveball into the mix by pulling the goalkeeper and bringing out the sixth attacker, Philly. We got a sixth attacker Elite Six this week. We're really putting our fans on notice. Can you please explain real quick the sixth attacker and why we don't have a keeper as part of our Elite Six?
Yeah, but before we do that, if we're going to impart indoor soccer rules, I have to give a warning to our producer Gunner in indoor soccer terms. That's a blue card. In the indoor world, a blue card means you go to the penalty box and there's a power play. Like hockey, you can pull your keeper for an extra attacker to give yourself the man advantage. Typically utilized when the game is on the line and a team is looking to come from a deficit, or in the case of the Empire Strikers, play the entire time. And considering the level of play brought to you by the players in the Elite Six, it only made sense to go that way. And obviously, we'll move on to the 11. But in indoor soccer, it's 5v5 with the goalkeeper, with the goalkeepers 2-6v6. So yeah, the great and powerful Oz that they call Gunner, blue card because he's throwing a curveball at us. But that's why there's no goalkeeper, and that's what we mean by a sixth attacker.
All right, let's talk about who our six are. Defenders Mauricio Cuevas and John Nelson for the Galaxy for their performance at Houston. Midfielder Chris Haygart from Orange County Soccer Club in that aforementioned destroying by Detroit. Kennedy Fuller for Angel City at Gotham and Lucas Sanabria for Galaxy at Houston, rounding out the midfield. And our forward, singular, would be Ethan Zubak and his penalty kick goal, Orange County Soccer Club. He somehow got to be the captain on this one. I know Gunner has a beautiful mind with all the numbers racing around and everything going on there. He's got this formula for captain. Let me ask you something, Timmy K. Out of these players, who came over the wall as the sixth attacker to replace the goalie? Which one of these six out there?
I think it's got to be Sanabria to get that snap header at the death. It has to be. You know, Haygart played a great game. Nelson gets the assist on that goal for Lucas Sanabria. And I think he gets it. I think he comes over the wall. The goalie goes into the tank and he comes down and gets the not empty netter, but he gets that sixth attacker goal. I think it was the goal of the weekend, in my opinion.
Yeah, there was only one right answer to that one. You are absolutely right. Philly, let me ask you, all those A. Thompson jerseys at BMO Stadium, I know they're still going to wear their jerseys. Heck, I still wear my Tyler Lucy shirt from every now and then.
No sleep, FB.
But let me ask you about Kennedy Fuller, the teenage star, continuing to do it for Angel City. I got to be honest, if I had my Alyssa Thompson jersey and I said, all right, I need a player that's currently on the team. While I love Giselle and I love a lot of the players on there, I got to go with Kennedy Fuller. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are this, Scarf. I'm a 40-year-old man, and the weirdest thing to do would be to wear the name of a 20-year-old or a teenager on my back. I am just simply stating the obvious, the elephant in the room, which is buying jerseys later on down the road. And one other thing I wanted to notice, looking at these names here, I have the majority of these guests and people on this list been on Soccer in 60. Johnny Nelson has, Chris Haygart has, if I'm not mistaken, Kennedy Fuller, Ethan Zubak. So no surprise, when you come on Soccer in 60, you face a great deal of success. But Kennedy Fuller, look, she took care of some business. Kennedy Fuller is the young talent that is on display at Angel City time and time again is just been utterly impressive. She absolutely deserves to be on this list. Would I buy her kit? Again, a 40-year-old guy wearing a 20-year-old's kit, I don't know about that, but I understand where you're going with that. I mean,
she scored
the fastest goal of the season for Angel City, so she better be on this freaking list.
That's right. Second fastest goal in team history, and this is why we could have had a best 11. Just bring on all those national team players. We would have seen Denis Bawanga, and we would have seen Sonny. Once again, this is Soccer in 60, everybody, brought to you by SAC Health System. And I want to remind you all, please, if you can, like and subscribe to both the podcast, but especially head on over to our YouTube channel. We would love to see you over there on YouTube. Hit that subscribe button. You get to see Philly. You get to see Timmy K. You get to see all the other incredible guests that we bring on here, whether it's players like Chris Haygart and Ethan Zubak or Kennedy Fuller, or hey, one day, Denis Bawanga, Son Heung-min, we would love to have you on Soccer in 60 as well. Please make sure that you like and subscribe to both the podcast itself and the show on YouTube. This continues to be the fastest paced soccer show on the internet. This has been Soccer in 60,